Coming up on WST Podcast, we have a very, very special guest. He was part of and a prominent portion of one of the most outstanding feats in all of sports, 151 games undefeated streak at De La Salle, the Spartans. Now he's head coach at Sarah. I'm talking about Patrick Walsh. K-Win, what do we get into with Mr. Walsh? Coach Walsh.
Patrick Walsh, Coach Walsh, we talk about the streak. It started back in 93, I believe, and it went on for 13 straight years. Amani Toomer, Maurice Jones Jr. Who else was on there? DJ Williams. We talk about the streak, the foundation of the streak, and the key to the streak was Coach Ladd, the De La Salle head coach. So tune in as Patrick talks about stories from the streak, his memories from the good old days, and much, much more.
And for all you Seattle localites that want to know how Bellevue beat them, we don't get into that. But listen in. Big Ben and Kay win.
Boom.
Boom.
Sounds great. Happy to be here.
All right. So awesome. We have an intern that did some digging, and he reached out to three people to help us with questions. Brent okay. Bianchina, oh, Damon God. Bowers, and Ali Averill.
Oh God! This is what rated is this show? We got to keep this clean.
We told him only to come back to us with their PG responses. So he's got the other ones out for a rainy day. If the three of us get together off camera, then we can share those stories.
Brilliant!
So the first story was actually a mandatory one from Brent Bianchina, and if you saw a little bit of the NBA playoffs, Kevin Durant had a historic night, had like 49 points, triple-double. But I want to go back to the summer of 92, junior year, you're playing Legion with my brother Brent Bianchina, and they say you ate 20 Twinkies during a baseball tournament one weekend.
Well, no, actually, we got rained out, and I heard somewhere that there was a challenge that someone said, you know, if you eat 20 Twinkies in an hour, you get $100. So someone challenged me on it. I'm like, that doesn't sound too bad. I love Twinkies. I'm all in. That was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And then afterwards, I felt like sugar running through my veins. I'm going crazy. I'm running around the hotel. I mean, this is what idiot baseball players do during rainout. But I got my $100. There was only one rule. You can only drink water and you can't throw up. Well, those are two rules. But those are the two rules. So I eked it out at the 59th minute. I swallowed that last Twinkie. Oh, my God. I haven't eaten a Twinkie since.
Yeah, I bet.
Brutal.
So in sticking with records, so De La Salle's football program holds the national record for 151-game winning streak in high school. Your 1993 team actually started that streak. I want to go back before the streak because we both grew up in the Danville area, and there's three main high schools. There's San Ramon, which I went to. There's Monta Vista, and there's De La Salle. You lived out of the jurisdiction to go to San Ramon, so what was involved in your decision process when you were looking at Monta Vista versus De La Salle?
Well, my dad is an East Coast Catholic, and there was not really going to be a choice ever. And so he came over from Massachusetts, went to Holy Cross, and we actually grew up. I was born in Vallejo, but I grew up my first 4 years of my life in Concord, pretty much next to De La Salle. And it was just a foregone conclusion. There was never even a choice. So my older brother went to De La Salle. Then I went to De La Salle. My sister went to Carondelet. Then my younger brother, Nicholas, you know, he was batted cleanup and he finished up at De La Salle. So it was a Walsh family thing well before we knew the lore of De La Salle, to be honest with you.
All right. So if Bianchina has any say in it, where if you look at the Fab Five, where Jalen Rose signed first and recruited C. Webb, it wasn't like that, him recruiting you over to De La Salle?
No chance. His older brother, Ricky Bianchina, though, like, it was a big factor in my life, and he was older than my brother, so because of my relationship with Brent, you know, the green was in my blood early, because we would go watch Ricky. He was a quarterback for De La Salle, and, you know, I knew early on that I wanted to play at De La Salle. Greg Prawn was a running back there, thighs bigger than everyone's body, I just was like, I want to be like that guy, Greg Prawn. And it was just kind of osmosis, but it was a foregone conclusion early with me and Brent. So
Coach Walsh, I hear you're an offensive line aficionado. Let's talk a little bit about the De La Salle program. So you were a freshman. You played JV, then they brought you up to varsity for the playoffs, if our intern's correct.
Correct.
Played scout team running back Aaron Taylor, who was a high school All-American, went on to become a first-round pick out of Notre Dame, was on that team. What was your first experience running behind Aaron, and how big were the holes that he produced in practice for you?
Well, here's the problem, and this is why. Like, right around 2:15, my stomach started erupting. You know, we got out of school at 2:30. I knew exactly where the bathroom was. Problem is Aaron Taylor went both ways.
Oh.
And, you know, the scout team O-line is not the Aaron Taylor O-line. I mean, that was a nice way to put it. But the De La Salle guys on the defense, you know, particularly back then, there wasn't this like, hey, you might get a concussion thing. That was the time where you're shaking things off. It was a rite of passage to rip the scout team. So I remember those guys, Luke Powell, Aaron Taylor, you know, all these guys up front. They wanted to make my life miserable. So I remember Aaron Taylor more the other way. Now, Aaron's a super nice guy. He actually treated me nicer than some of the other Spartans. There was a little bit of a fraternal hazing type thing. Not hazing, but, you know, just like, hey, welcome to varsity, guys. You know, so it was a rough, you know, thank God they don't have like regionals and state championships back then, because it would have been like 6 weeks of misery. So, yeah, he was a great guy, man. There's been so much talent there. You know, it's incredible to be able to play in a program with guys like Aaron and Amani Toomer, and, you know, Ali Abreu played and set records at Cal Poly, and Andy Nicholson, another one of our teammates, you know, from Danville. He should have went to Monta Vista, but he didn't. You know, he was a dominant player at Cal, but just some great athletes. And then when I came back to coach, 98, 99, and 2000, you know, I was the coach. I made all the difference in the world. And DJ Williams, Maurice Jones-Drew, mm-hmm. Kevin Simon, Matt Gutierrez. I mean, you know, there's a running joke around there. I literally did nothing. I was the running back coach for all these guys. Yeah, I go over there, run real fast, and score. Like, all right, coach, I got you.
And you had a hand with Ricky Williams, didn't you, at Texas?
Of course, yeah. System. You know, what's the similarities here? I was there for all of them.
The Midas touch.
Yeah. I love it. Although I will say Ricky Williams, as talented and physical as he was, did not have big hands. All right. So he, like, my hands aren't very big either. But like, I remember he did a hand thing and he was having trouble fumbling. And I said, look, you know, Ricky, I noticed, watch some film. You know, you know, make sure that, you know, the football's up in the crown, get the fingertips through there. And he kind of wasn't doing that. And the next game he fumbled three times. And I'm like, all right, I'm out. When I think back on the start of my football career, I think about that. Or my coaching career, I think about that moment with Ricky Williams and how much I had to learn. part of what I've learned in my years of coaching is with guys like Ricky Williams and whatever, just get out of their way and let them be themselves. Best advice I can give anybody.
So when we talk about the streak and the program being depicted in the movie and everything in and around the De La Salle program, known for the chemistry, work ethic, and then the dominant running game led by O-line coach Alexos, what was so special about those principles that they would teach that would just make that running game churn?
Well, Coach Alexos, when he got to De La Salle, he brought in a lineman first mentality, and he made it special to be a lineman, and he coached D-line as well. And, you know, the running backs and the quarterbacks, you guys know football, like, they get all the glory, they get everything, names in the paper and all that, but they made me an honorary lineman my senior year. And that was we got hats that said linemen win games. I'll never forget it. Best hat I've ever owned. And I just felt so proud to be a part of the lineman group. They'd go on camping trips, and, you know, it was almost like a team within the team. But it's a special, unique character. People, when they think of De La Salle, they think, how the hell do they get off the ball like that? You know, it's just that line get off is just a staple of De La Salle football. And there's a lot of magic and work and effort and everything that goes on to getting off the ball at De La Salle. So, yeah, Coach Alexikos, and I think, you know, I came in at the right time as, you know, when I was coming through De La Salle. I think we had a blessing of losing in 91, believe it or not. You know, I graduated in 93, so we're talking about the fall of 92. That's when the streak started. But, you know, we lost in 91, and it was a great blessing because it brought so much pain and misery to the guys that I just mentioned, John Flacco, Justin Allenbaugh, you know, some of these other guys that were like, you know, Buck Shea, like, we're not going to do that. No, that's not going to happen. We're going to, and not only that, we're never going to feel like this ever again. And we went about setting a culture that, you know, with Coach Alexikos when he came in, Coach Mike Blasquez came in and revamped the speed, strength, and conditioning. You know, Coach Ladd and Edson and Pinella, they were doing everything by themselves. But they brought in Coach Alexikos, brought in Coach Coach Mike Blasquez, who's now at Cal, just won Strength Coach of the Year awards just over and over and over again. And it was the perfect time to launch. You know, I'll wear this ring and I'll wear my 151 ring. Those are the only rings I'll ever wear. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, we didn't just win 13 games. You know, we won for 13 years.
Yeah.
And that's tells me that, you know, myself and my friends in that time period, we changed a culture. Sure. And that's something that I'll always be proud of.
I talked to Ali Abreu today, tracked him down, and he said Patrick Walsh sums up the Spartan way, like the work ethic, the drive, the determination. And I asked him for a story. He's like, I've got so many stories on him. But the one he shared was, he said it was really hot in your house and used to circulate fans. And in your room, you had all these newspaper clippings for when you lost against Pittsburgh. And yeah, you just use that as motivation to keep the train moving and keep the team focused on, like, let's yeah, not let this happen again and let's get our revenge.
That's right. Yeah. You know, that loss in the Coliseum to Percy McGee and head coach Herc Pardee, P-A-R-D-I, you know, started a movement, right? It started a cultural change. And, you know, part of that was I pinned the East Bay Times or one of these papers, and the title had Coach Herc Pardee holding the trophy, and it says, it's Pardee time. It's Pardee time. That was the article. And it would, and I would train the fan to be on it, and it would kind of shake and wouldn't piss me off. And I knew that our purpose was to get Pitt and to beat those guys. And the first time we beat them 41-6 or something like that. Second time we played in the Coliseum, we beat them similar score, like 42-7. It was like 82-13. Just like, no, you guys got us in 91, but this ain't happening ever again. And you know what? It hasn't. You know, being a head coach here and at this great school at Sarah, no one's lost since in the Northern California. No one's lost since that night in 1991.
Wow. And I think the average margin of victory throughout the streak was something in and around 39 points. So that just tells you, I mean, the strength of the program. What else, if you could say, put a finger on it, leads up to the strength of the program or continues the program throughout that streak year over year? It's not just a crop of great or freshmen going through 4 years, because that was sustained through 13. What do you think continued that momentum or that culture?
Two words: Coach Ladd. I mean, he was a legend before all that, and we just, you know, we took ownership as the kids of the program, but the North Star of that program was always Coach Bob Lattiser, hands down. And, you know, Terry was there side by side with him all the way, you know, as a defensive coordinator. But, you know, the speeches Coach Ladd would give would touch your soul. They just run so deep. And I, you know, the words he told us and told me as a impressionable young man, and he's the reason why I'm sitting here today, you know, being a football coach in high school. I knew that I wanted to coach. You know, I wanted to coach NFL in college, and I had dreams of doing that. It didn't work out. God led me here to Sarah. But, You know, Coach Ladd is just the most amazing human being on the planet. And the heart and soul, literally his heart and soul that he poured into the Spartan program was, you know, those two words kept us on track the whole time and all. And then the kids after us just said, okay, we're going to be like those guys. We're going to be like those guys. We're going to be like those guys. And we just kept passing it down. And then it was like, well, shit, we can't be the guy. We can't be the guys that do that. You know, so I played in the first game and coached in the 100th. So when we won our 100th game, I was coaching, and that was, I think it might have been College Park, or I don't remember exactly who it was, but I remember, like, I played in the first and coached in the 100th, which is pretty cool. Coached my brother's team, my younger brother, and Alan Ball, and it'll never be duplicated. And even, you know, now that you know, we're playing more national schedules and, you know, playing in, you know, modern day in Bosco, we're playing a different game right now. You know, it's never going to happen again unless they do it. Yes.
Almost got to 400, 399.25. That's remarkable.
Yep.
That is absolutely remarkable.
Yeah. And it's so Coach Ladd to quit right before 400, you know, I don't mean quit, retire, right? Or it's right. So Coach Ladd. It's like, you know, every other human being on the planet would be like, all right, let me get 400, ceremonial goodbye. And you don't care about any of that stuff. And that's the true secret of, you know, the Spartan brotherhood and what we do for one another. We play for one another. We don't play for the scoreboard. You know, we play for the love of our teammates, and we sacrifice, you know, parties and other things for the love of one another. And knowing that, you know, there's going to be some gritty times where I can depend on this guy next to me. And that's Spartan football.
So Coach Ladd has a reputation of giving a famous Halloween speech. Is there one speech or one moment that sticks out during your time playing for him?
Yeah, I mean, he would stand up. His kids were younger at that time. It'd be Halloween, like a Wednesday night, October 31st. And he'd go, "This is not your holiday. This is my kids' holiday. Don't be going out robbing kid bags, throwing rotten apples at cars, beating up on kids. This is not your holiday. Go home, rent a slasher film, get freaked out, and go to sleep." That's my best impression. I don't know if any of the Sarah kids will watch this. And the reason why I can say it so good like that is because I say that every October 30th. Like a slasher film. What's a slasher film? Like, you know, so I still give that speech. I've done it 2012, not this year, but for 19 straight years I did.
So if I look back to watching you play, I was a sophomore when you were a senior. And I remember going to a De La Salle game because everyone's like, Amani Toomer, you got to check him out. And so I think this was your junior year.
Yeah, that's right.
And so Amani Toomer, it was unbelievable. I believe he returned the kickoff for a touchdown. And then the first play, I may exaggerate a little bit, but that's what's good. The first play, I believe it was a slant pass from Ollie Abreu. He took it to the house. A flag, they had to bring it back. I think they ran the same play, Ben. Again, another slant. He took it right to the house again. I'm like, this guy is unbelievable.
Yeah, he was great.
So thinking about all the people you played with and the memories, what's your fondest memory from De La Salle?
You know, I think the fondest memory for me was, you know, our team dinners. When I think of Spartan football, you know, I can tell you a bunch of stories about games, and, you know, probably the game that stands out the most is when we lost, to be honest with you, which is kind of sad, but it's purposeful now. there's so many good moments there. But when I think of Spartan football, you know, I think of the time I spent together with my friends and in team dinners, and, you know, the things that we would say in our family's garages, and the commitments we made to one another, and just pouring our love and hearts out for one another. And then just going out and doing that on the field, just, you know, the game was a byproduct of all the things that we did prior to the game. And, you know, we have chapel service every, you know, every Thursday before the game. Then we'd go to someone's house and have a team dinner, and I remember guys' speeches, and you know, kids would cry and tell each other they love each other. I mean, that's a unique environment for any high school. You know, we all play high school football, and there's 48 minutes and all that stuff, but that's what I remember the most, to be honest with you.
So I hate to bring up the game, but me being up here in Seattle, and I was telling Kay Wynn, I actually called a few games post-college. I went to school for broadcasting, so I called a few games post-college at the Gridiron Classic. And okay. Bellevue was a big draw up here because Butch had won, I think, 4 straight championships or large school championships. So that was the first game of the year, and you guys came up. Lopina actually was a quarterback, and he ended up at Wazoo. So I have ties all around this game. But I think looking at the dialogue or the volume of that game was just hit one of the players when they walked in after they lost and saw ESPN across the ticker that De La Salle had lost, right?
Yeah.
So what impact did that have to the program? And did that reverberate in the same effect you talked about where you lost to Pittsburgh and then like, all right, now we're back at square one. Let's build it back up.
You know, it got to be so big, I think. It became like a giant gorilla on everyone's back. And I know for Bob, it was a relief. Because the irony was so thick, you know, that he uses football to teach life lessons and not necessarily winning. And the irony of it all is that all we did was win. Mm-hmm. And it never really was the message of the program, I think. I mean, we're competitive dudes. We're not going out. We keep score and everything. We're going out there to win the football game. But that's really never been the purpose of Coach Ladd's existence. So I think it was more of a relief than anything else, particularly since we just dominated, crushed the record, which was 72 or something.
Yeah.
I think Hudson, Michigan, like 72 wins. And then we got to 100. And then we got to 113. And it's like, you know, 13 years of winning is an amazing thing. I think it's 13, 11 or 13. Something. But, you know, winning for over a decade in a row became a burden, I think, for the kids and for Coach Ladd. So, yeah, I would say, you know, it was a nice reset button. We started at ground zero, and, you know, I think it helped the program once again exist for each other, which is it's all about. Mm-hmm. Media attention is ridiculous over there anyway. But, yeah, I think it was a healthy thing. And it was out of state, like, whatever, Seattle, Bellevue. It wasn't like losing to Monta Vista or, you know, Pitt.
Silver lining.
It was a Seattle All-Star team. We know that, right?
It was. I will say that. It was a Seattle All-Star team.
Because I remember Hastie's kid was on the team, right?
Yeah. If you know anything about – so the East Side, there's East Side Catholic has now developed into a really good team. So that East Side, you have to make a decision. Is it Bellevue or is it East Side Catholic? That's hot team right now is East Side Catholic. But prior, it was go to Bellevue. And that's a public school. So they had everyone coming into Bellevue. So, yeah, you got beat by an all-star team that effectively was a pipeline to UW for a long, long time.
You're right. And they, you know, they had a plan. They, you know, everyone read the book. And it was like, you know, you want to beat them, you got to join them. And it's kind of the same here at Sarah. You know, we have a really good program here. You know, but nobody works harder than the Spartans. I'm sorry. You know, I'm throwing Sarah in that lump too. And those guys, you know, when COVID hit, they, you know, scraped everything out of the batting cages and threw a weight room out there. They've been lifting since January. They never stopped. Like, we're getting outside. COVID, we're in lifting. So I love that about my Spartans, you know.
I'm going to ask a question because it is relevant. I saw you were a big proponent of letting kids out, you know, getting to play, you know, the things that it did for mental. Was it that largely, because I agree with you on this, largely because you saw what De La Salle did for everyone and around the program, and just the lack of that for a year for a kid can leave a lot of gaps in terms of how they progress or progress as a human and as an athlete overall?
No doubt about it. I've said in the past, you know, I was fighting as much for my 17-year-old self as I was mm-hmm. for the 17-year-olds right now. you know, that whole Herc Pardee thing with the you know, the thing flapping in the wind, like that was, you know, it makes me want to cry every time I think about how screwed these kids got in the state of California. Particularly since, you know, 40 other states already completed football season without spreading COVID to everybody and killing everyone. It didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So the data was there, the science was there, everything was there, and the mental health of me thinking of myself as a 17-year-old and then looking at the 17-year-olds here on campus at Sarah and then ultimately growing and hearing all the stories from around the state of all these coaches. Like, and I struggled, man. I had my own mental problems, you know, mm-hmm. just as an adult. And, you know, just, yeah, to answer your question directly, there was a lot of fuel there for that young boy as a 17-year-old not having a senior year. I would not be who I was today, and I would be on a watch list. I'm not even gonna lie. I would be on a watch list.
Yeah. You know, you weren't alone. So, I commend you for that, coach. It's a big thing.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's, you know, if they made a ring for that, I'd probably wear that one too. Yeah. You know, I just, you know, when it comes to being a head coach and hanging banners and, you know, that's the kids, man, they're running around. They're the ones scoring touchdowns and making plays, but you know, that kind of that 151 changing the culture and affecting generations of stuff. That's something our team, no one can ever take away from the 92 team. And then, you know, this thing where we literally affected 3 million kids and, you know, worked with the government, worked with Newsom and his team, you know, infecting so many lives. Like, I mean, it's just, it's overwhelming, to be honest with you.
And even those 5 games probably just, you know, that you were able to get in did so much for those kids. Oh. Not only that, but beyond recruiting, you know, preparing for college, just whatever you could get in and instill.
Yeah. We had a kid, you know, his name's Christian Pedersen, and he's been playing football his whole life. And, you know, thankfully he had a scholarship offer to Louisville. So he's got an ACC kid going over there, big kid, good hands, tough kid. And he stood up in our last team dinner, and which is our kind of our chapel service as well. And he stood up and said, "I've never played in 5 more meaningful games in my entire life." And even the pain that we went through, this was the best experience I've ever had. And he was on the team that, you know, in 2019, we lost a state championship game by 8 points, played 16 games or 15 games. He's like, "I would rather do this." And so there's a lot of meaning and a lot of depth in that comment. When I heard that, I broke down in tears. Like, oh my God, pretty impressive. Yeah.
Very, very powerful. So yeah. Patrick, we wrap up with West Coast Swing. They're quick, rapid-fire answers or questions, no right or wrong. I've got 3. Big Ben may have 2 or 3 of them. We'll get you out of here. Does that sound good?
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. This is a write-in question from the San Ramon Valley Orioles. They want to know if your dad and Brent Bianchina's dad cheated and bent the rules to stack the team for a dynasty run. True or false?
No, that's false. I mean, I was not left-handed, and I threw left-handed in tryouts. No. We used what was called a manager's coach's option, right? So Mr. Bianchina, you know, obviously got to have his son, and then because my dad was the assistant coach, they got to draft me in the 6th round. I mean, that's just fair. That's just
the rule. All right. Second question here. So you played Little League All-Stars, and you guys did very well as 12 and 15. I think 15 you went to the national championship game against Taiwan.
Yeah.
Bob Myers, the Warriors general manager, was on one of those teams. Scott Murphy, Dwayne Murphy's son, Brett Bianchina, Damon Bowers, Andy Nicholson, Bo Fischer. But who was the most clutch out of all those players growing up?
Wow. If you're going to go clutch, I'm going to have to go with my boy, Brent Bianchina.
All right.
Clutch.
I feel like that was a leading question. I tell you what, Brent was clutch, but, you know, Scott Murphy, I'll tell you what, I don't know. If you get Murphy up there with guys on base, something good is going to happen.
All right. And so I got one more, Ben. So after baseball games, we used to go, Danville used to go to Round Table Pizza. Now, if we stick in the Danville area, I believe your dad was a co-owner in Tony Roma's. What was your favorite thing to order off the Tony Roma's meal menu?
Oh, ribs. I mean, just ribs all day long. I mean, it's a house for ribs. It's Tony Roma's, a house for ribs. I mean, there was, I probably set some 20 twinkies in an hour. I mean, I don't even want to do the rib count. That's those ribs were damn good. But I tell you that in our younger days, Frankie G's.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Frankie G's was the spot, man. That place, is. There's a lot of good memories down there.
So you started coaching at Sarah at 26.
Yeah.
How would you say your coaching philosophies evolved over time? This is a little bit deeper for the West Coast Swing. Outside of that standard yearly Halloween speech that you give.
Well, the 2001 guys would tell the 2020, 2019 guys that I've gotten soft. I think the biggest changes is just kind of the language I use and you know how I treat the kids and you know I give more time off now. You know, I just the times have changed for sure in those 20 years, but I would say that my 26-year-old self, you know, there was a dad when I was 26, he said, "You know what, Coach Walsh, I'll never forget this. This is my first year coaching." He goes, "You need to deal with people in your program with a little less salt and a little more sugar." And it didn't hit me till about maybe 10 years after that where I'm like, God, I get what he's saying now. It didn't hurt that I had a couple of my own kids too. You know, like there's two phases of life, guys. Two, pre-kids and post-kids.
Ben's about to have a kid in October.
There's still time, man.
She's already far enough along. I can't hit the eject button.
Hang in there, baby.
So the last question I want to ask, and this is relevant because I was the O-line coach at a preparatory school here in Seattle.
Okay.
And I think I just saw a photo with one of your alumni with the current O-line. And those kids were three times the size of the kids I was working with. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
But my question to you is, what's the best part of coaching at Sarah?
Oh, just the relationships with the kids. It's the best part. I mean, I love these kids so much. You know, they're so like buoyant. They're so hopeful, and they all got dreams, and they're all growing up, and they're. This is the perfect age to coach, in my opinion. They're impressionable. They listen. You know, they want success. And just, you know, I love these kids so much, man. They keep me coming back year after year. I mean, you know, Sarah's the same, but the kids change every year, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm very appreciative of the parents who've accepted me here. You know, I see these people as my clients. You know, they pay good money to come to school here. So, but, you know, without these kids, you know, like, the guy you were talking about is right here, David Bakhtiari.
Yeah.
That's the pitcher you're talking about. Like Dave was here Saturday. You know, I you know, he's a $64 million tackle, but you know, he's a kid. I see him as a 16-year-old punk, which he was.
I would say judging from the number he has in the NFL, there's still a tad of that punk in him.
Well, 100%. I mean, you know, I know we're in PG land, but he just reached out to Trojan and said, "How come you guys haven't reached out to me? I should be your right hand." Matter with you guys? I just sent that tweet earlier. Yes,
that was a marketing ploy.
Oh, he's got a great point. I mean, you know. Yeah. So I'd say the kids for sure.
So Patrick, we had a great time. Thanks for joining. We know you do a lot of stuff outside of Sarah with Next Level and your flag football program. Do you want to plug that real quick before you sign off?
Yeah, I mean, nextlevelsports.com is a business myself and my co-founder Lance Smith started, you know, 2010 was our first, 2011. You know, we do girls basketball, you know, boys basketball, flag football is our meat and potatoes, and girls volleyball. But, you know, trying to bring that old school Los Cerros, Little League love back, you know, San Ramon Valley to sports. We don't specialize. We're a one trophy league. You know, if you win, you celebrate. If you lose, you cry. You know, we want kids to sleep in their uniforms. Like we used to do growing up, you know, and I think sometimes, you know, the specialization stuff and going to Manteca every weekend and it's like we wanted to bring it back. You know, you get 20 hours of a few games, have fun. And that's what Next Level Sports is all about. So I'm real proud of how far that team has come as well. Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Well, bonus question. I'll keep it quick. This is how we get people on the hook for the next show. This person has to be in your phone. You have to know this person.
Okay.
Who would you like to see come on our show next to talk about a West Coast sports moment? Because you have to try to help us get them.
Oh, man. I think you got to go with Maurice Jones-Drew.
All right.
I'm going to stick in the Spartan family. You know, MJD, he's, you know, like you, Ben, he's in television and he's well-spoken guy. And, you know, he was part of the meet, that kind of middle ground when De La Salle went from guys that kind of looked like me to, you know, guys that get rookies of the year in the NFL. So I'm sure he's got some great stories, you know, at the highest level of Spartan football.
All right, man. We might have to reach out to you to help make that happen.
Amen.
Hey, and good luck. Hope your son ends up with the Waves. They're doing big things. Helps them repeat. Hopefully they become the program, the De La Salle of golf here in the future. So congrats again. We loved having you on. Thanks, Coach Walsh.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
Thanks, Coach Walsh.
Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Take care.